Good evening. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming tonight. This is obviously a packed house, standing room only. If I could ask some of you that are in a center position, if you wouldn't mind maybe getting cozy to the person next to you, that'll allow some other openings. We've got still people coming in. If you wouldn't mind, we'd appreciate that. We've got some empty seats down here. I hate to be disruptive, but it's 18 degrees outside, so perhaps sitting closer will warm everybody up more rapidly. Okay, everybody, thank you very much. It's my pleasure at this moment to introduce Dean Prabhu David from the College of Communication Arts and Sciences.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming tonight on a very cold and frosty evening. The fact that you're here shows that you care. And, you know, it's also the first work day of the year, and Happy New Year, and thank you all for coming. So the fact that you care is obvious. There is this note. Rarely do I get handwritten notes these days. Written in beautiful cursive hand, I received a note in the mail today. It was dated January 2nd, arrived today in the mail. And it says, "Sir, I do not understand about the spectrum auction. What is it? Why are you even considering it? Who will it benefit? Will it benefit anyone? I'm 85 years of age and will not attend the forum as I drive only when necessary. I would like information on the broadcast television. I feel that many of your supporters in my age group would appreciate more information. I look forward to your response." This is one of many responses we've received from the community, and we know it. You really care. And we care as well. As the Dean of the College of Communication, WKAR is part of our college. We care about WKAR. We care about how WKAR gives us opportunities for education, how we can train our students through WKAR. Also, we're concerned and we're thinking about the potential for innovation in the future, because the spectrum is a very valuable asset and there are new ways in which we can use the spectrum. So all these things are being considered. And I want to make two points abundantly clear. One, no decision has been made, and the reason you're here is to offer input to the university administration about this pending decision. Two, nothing we do here has any bearing on radio. We're discussing only television. So the spectrum auction has no relevance, no bearing whatsoever to our radio operations. So with that, I'm just going to give you a quick overview of the evening. We're going to start with Provost Hewitt, who's going to make a few brief remarks. Then we'll have Gary Reed, who runs media operations for the college. And then we'll also have Vice President Bill Beekman make a few remarks. These remarks will be short, get you some information that is essential to understand what is at stake, the various variables that are in play. And then Susie will lead a group discussion or questions from the audience. Two requests for that. Please keep your responses or your comments short. As you can see, we have a number of people here. We'd like to hear from as many of you as possible. So keep it to 2 minutes. And there would be opportunities for you to sign up, to participate, and to receive some emails, and to express your opinions in other ways. Yes, please.
I'd like to ask a question that I believe a lot of people would like to know. How is the information, the questions, and the answers that we are going to say, how are they going to be processed through the people that are going to be making the decision?
Right. So one other announcement that pertains to your question. So how is this information going to be relayed? And how is this information going to be used? This is a public forum, so anything you say is public. So be cognizant of that. Also, as you can see, there are There are video cameras that are recording this event, and there is an audio recording as well. So that's another thing for you to consider. But all of this information will be processed, and we are going to look at it again, and the number of ways in which you're communicating to us via social media, via all kinds of emails and online forums and so on. We're going to collect all this information and make it available as to the president and the board of trustees as they make the decision. Okay, with that, I'm going to invite Provost Hubert to make a few remarks.
Well, thank you, and as Dean David said, thank you all for being here. It really is a statement about our community and the ways in which we step in and step up when there are important decisions to be made. And there is an important decision to be made. I, like most of you in the room, have spent a good deal of time enjoying the programming of WKAR as an adult, but also as a mom of three children. Sometimes that hour of Sesame Street was the only one in the day where everyone wasn't at me. So I appreciate both what we do locally, what we have and do enjoy as part of PBS broadcasting, and what WKAR is to our community. And I appreciate what it's been to Michigan State University. WKAR at its founding was really an outreach tool for the university. It was the way in which a land-grant institution found to reach to audiences that could not otherwise be reached. And so when WKAR began, that was a major factor in that decision. Not all land-grant schools had public radio stations. Not all AAU schools had public radio television stations. They do not now. But we have for many years, and it's an important part of MSU's legacy. One of the things, as we talk tonight, that I hope you will come to appreciate, no matter how strongly you feel about WKAR, as I think all of us do, is that there is a difficult decision to be made. There are opportunity costs to be considered, and I suspect that many of you tonight will point out what some of those opportunity costs are. But we find ourselves in a position where we have to decide what is best for our community, what is best for our university, what is best for the next generation of students that we are committed to educating, preparing for work not just in media, but in related fields. We have to think about what we could do with the asset we have and what we might do with the assets we would gain. And as Vice President Beekman will tell you, and what Mr. Reed will tell you, and what Dean David will tell you again, and what I will commit to you now, is that absolutely no decision has been made. Absolutely no decision has been made. In my role and in President Simon's role, every day we are faced with difficult dilemmas about what is in the best interest of our institution, our students, our faculty, our community. And this is one of those really, really difficult decisions. There is no good answer. There are many answers. But tonight, we are anxious to hear how you see this. We're anxious to listen to how you see it. And as you've heard, all of this information that we garner tonight will be shared with President Simon and the Board of Trustees who hold the license to WKAR. Again, I look around the room and I know many of you in this room. I know you are thoughtful people who have come here tonight because you have something important to say. And I thank you again for being here, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Provost Hewitt, thank you very much. One other announcement I forgot to mention is we plan to close by 9, and preferably before 9. So keep your comments short, and if you're nervous that this is going to be an all-night session, no fear of that. So I'm going to turn it over to Bill Beekman.
Oh, sorry.
Gary next.
Thank you, Prabhu. I realize that there are a lot of factors involved here, so I thought what I would do is just take a couple of minutes and try to work you through all of the various details that have brought us to this particular point. With the spectrum auction, you might say, why now? What is happening? The wireless carriers, AT&T, Verizon, we probably all have bills from them on a monthly basis, are seeking extra spectrum, additional bandwidth that ultimately would be able to enhance their services. That was really the impetus behind the whole spectrum auction. Congress gave the Federal Communication Commission the power to act. So this isn't just an FCC issue. It really comes from Congress's point of view. The FCC will try to reclaim anywhere between 84 and 126 megahertz of the ultra-high frequency UHF spectrum. And that's in currently the TV band. So that 84 to 126 megahertz is just the space in the spectrum that the wireless carriers want to be able to move forward. So that's really what's driving this this whole process. This bandwidth needs to be contiguous, which what I mean by that is it's together. When we all grew up and looking across the room here, most of us remember before the digital transition. If you lived in Detroit, you had television channel 2, 4, 7, 9, etc. In Lansing here, we had channel 6, 10. There was an 8 in Grand Rapids. There's a 12 in Flint. So the whole idea of those stations was so that interference wouldn't happen. In 2009, when we all made the transition to digital television, that interference issue went away. So it's now possible to pack the stations 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, straight across. So rather than having a bunch of bandwidth in between channels, the FCC is looking to reclaim and then repack the remaining TV channels so that there can be a large swath of bandwidth, the upper channels, available for auction to the wireless carriers. So that's really the technical process that came behind that. Only UHF, the ultra-high frequency, is valuable. This is really only the spectrum that we're talking about for the wireless industry. So every television station that is on the air, whether it's us or Channel 6 or Channel 2 or 7 or 12, whoever it is, every TV station is allocated 6 megahertz of spectrum. And we're licensed to use that spectrum. We renew that license every 8 years. In that 6 megahertz, up to 4 independent television channels can be encoded. Those of you that watch WKAR know that we have WKAR HD, that's our main channel, but we also have WKAR Create, and we also have WKAR World. So we're dividing that 6 megahertz up so that we can show you 3 separate TV channels. At most, dividing that spectrum up, we could have 4 independent channels. We choose not to do that because we prefer the HD quality, the high definition quality of our main channel, and then Create and World is SD or standard definition. TV falls into 3 general frequency ranges. The low VHF consists of channels 2 through 6. The high VHF consists of TV channels 7 through 13. The UHF band, and that's really what the FCC is interested in and we're talking about, are TV channels 14 through 51. And ultimately, they're trying to clear from channel 51 on down. Okay? So with that in mind, the TV channels have been spaced to minimize any interference between the channels. This has largely been taken care of in the digital transition. Currently, there are 1,780 television stations in the United States, and estimates, they vary, but they range from 200 all the way up to 600 TV channels will have to relinquish their bandwidth to get to that goal of reclaiming 84 to 126 megahertz. Now, we don't know how that's going to play out because every station owner, in this case we're representing the Board of Trustees, but every TV station owner, whether a public or commercial station, has been given an offer, and they will have to make the same decision that we're making here tonight. Lansing has five UHF stations, of which we are one. Another issue that's important to think about why Lansing is an important market is because of our proximity to Canada. Canada has reserved certain television channels, even though they do not have TV broadcasts on them right now. And that puts a particular burden on the spectrum that we have in Michigan. It goes down into Toledo and so on. So the prices that each station have been offered is not necessarily based on their market value or even their market size, but it's based on how much spectrum needs to be reclaimed in that market. So it's a little bit different than just the value of a TV station. The process here really starts with what's called a reverse auction. So by a reverse auction, that's a little bit odd to think about, I guess. The FCC is actually the unit that will be purchasing these TV stations. So we have gotten a bid, just like every other TV station has gotten a bid, and that will be the very, very highest number that we could ever gain for the relinquishment of our spectrum. Our bid happens to be $206 million. That will go down as the auction goes. So you're going to start at 206, but it'll go maybe 195, 185, and so on. It'll work its way down because we are in competition, if you will, with the owners of the other TV stations, not just in Lansing, but in Toledo and Lima, Ohio, Flint, Saginaw, et cetera. So all of this is going to happen on a nationwide basis. Once that reverse auction has happened, the FCC then will do a more traditional forward auction and say, we can allow X amount of bandwidth that we've reclaimed from broadcasters, and we're going to offer it to anybody that's interested, AT&T, Verizon, Google, Sprint, and so on, anyone that wishes to purchase that. And then they will bid that number up. The difference between what the FCC gains in their forward auction and what they've agreed in the reverse auction will ultimately go back to the federal government. So it's a fairly complex but odd process in many ways. We have what's called the Green Hill Reports.
I was wondering, is this being offered to all UHF stations?
This has been offered to every television station in the country, yes.
Have any of our local stations even considered it for a minute?
That I can't answer.
We'd like to know.
The Green Hill Report estimates station value, and that's been done across the country. So every TV station has been given a value based on this frame. Okay. Once this is all done, the FCC will repack stations. So the stations remaining on the air, and 1,200 plus will probably remain on the air, will then be repacked where their frequencies will be moved closer to one another to allow that space. So as you could tell, this is probably a fairly complicated technical issue that will come into play. The FCC will pay the cost to repack. So if WKAR remains on the air, it will be costly for us to change our frequency and so on. Those funds will be paid to us, so there will be no cost to us to remain on the air, but on a different channel. The timeline that's involved, by next Tuesday, January 12th, the President and the administration will have to tell the FCC that we are interested in this process to be included. So they merely have to say to the FCC that in order to be considered, we have to register. Once we get past next Tuesday, there is what is called a quiet period. And that's where owners of stations are not going to be permitted to talk so that we don't, in very easy terms, we don't bias or tip our hand as to what else might happen in this auction. So this quiet period is coming from federal government, prevents stations from talking publicly about what they're going to do, whether they're going to participate, what their number is, and so on. That doesn't stop any of us here from still making comments and giving advice to the Board of Trustees and the President. The auction itself will begin on March 29th, and this is all done electronically. And it should be complete by sometime in July. So once this begins, it will happen fairly rapidly. Once this July comes around and the FCC declares the auction done, stations will have up to 39 months to repack, to change the frequencies. The station would also have approximately 3 months to go off air if the station was sold. There are a number of options that the FCC has presented. One would be non-participating. So stations may simply say, no, we're not interested straight away, we will not participate. Another option, if we decide to participate, could simply say, we will relinquish, we will sell straight away. There is an option called channel sharing, and that's where two television stations would enter an agreement. One of the 6 megahertz would be sold, and then those two stations would share that bandwidth, maybe 3 megahertz apiece, in a shared arrangement. The channel sharing arrangement, in discussions with the provost and president and the board, is largely considered really a non-viable option due for several reasons. There are some future options coming up. You'll hear it talked about as ATSC 3, Advanced Television Standards Committee 3.0. Within about a year to 2 years, we will have a radically new television standard that we will all be watching anyway. This is completely separate, divorced from this auction. That ATSC 3 standard is a better utilization of the spectrum, and it really offers a lot of possibilities. Having only half of the bandwidth in a channel share arrangement would severely limit what we could do in the future with ATSC 3. It's also considered fairly non-viable in that the money gained from a channel share would really be less than 50% of what ultimately is being offered. There is another option of a move to VHF, move down to that lower band. That option has also been deemed non-viable due to future limitations of ATSC 3. It would also make it significantly more difficult for people to receive that. In large measure, you'd have to have a larger antenna and probably an outdoor antenna. So while some stations may opt for that, in our particular marketplace, the technical limitations really prevent moving from VHF. It doesn't make sense to move off the waterfront, back a couple of miles off the lake. So that's really just the process of that option. To give you an idea, this is the official coverage area that the FCC looks at when they've evaluated us. We all tend to be pretty much in the immediate Lansing area. WKAR reaches 1.6 million people, about 722,000 homes, or as they call them, housing units. You get a good sense of how the coverage for our broadcast signal exists across mid-Michigan. We touch all or part of 19 counties. Just to give you a couple of quick facts, and then I'll stand aside for Vice President Beekman. WKAR coverage 1.6 million, about 722,000 homes. Through our counties there, we've got 17,000 active members. Fortunately, not all in this room tonight. but we appreciate your attention. To give you an idea, the weekly cumulative audience is about 28% of that 1.6 million people, and that's according to Nielsen, which is the television rater. We're seen in 30,800 homes daily, about 108,000 homes on a weekly basis. When we add in the surrounding markets, which would be Flint, Grand Rapids, and Detroit, our signals do get down into that market area. We see another 38% increase in our viewership. We've had a 5% increase in ratings since 2014, so we're on the incline there. Approximately 17% of our viewership is off-air. And what I mean by that is you have an antenna. You don't have a cable connection or a satellite connection. This is our fourth consecutive year as being named the Michigan Public Television Station of the Year. We're very proud of that. We received two Emmy Awards for our production work this year and received two national awards for Curious Crew and Sweetie-licious, which are local productions that we did here. That doesn't include any of the PBS programming that comes through. Okay. We produce six original series, one of which is distributed nationally, and there are five specials that are given each year.
Do you have statistics about the internet access rates for the area of residents? So what percentage of households have internet access in their house? And high-speed internet access is 50 megabits per second faster.
That varies, and I've seen estimates anywhere from 25% to 50% in this market.
Can you repeat the question so the rest of us know what you're answering?
I asked about internet access statistics.
Moderator repeats the question.
So if I could, we've got a couple of microphones, so I'm just going to move through here a little bit, and then we'll deal with all of these questions. We're going to have Peter working this side of the aisle and Susie working that side of the aisle. We have two wireless microphones, and what we'll do is move through the aisle. If you can raise your hand, we'll be able to hear that so everyone can understand.
But just repeat his question, please.
His question was, what is the internet access in the Lansing area? The answer that we've received is somewhere between 25 and 50%. Comments can be emailed directly to spectrum@wkar.org. If you're so inclined and have the internet access, wkar.org, and look for the FCC spectrum auction from there. And with that, I'd like to introduce Vice President Beekman.
Welcome. and I will overlap a few things Gary said. I wanted to focus on where we are as a university, the decision-making process, and next steps. Oh, I'm Bill Beekman, B-E-E-K-M-A-N, Vice President and Secretary of the Board of Trustees here at Michigan State. Okay. Thank goodness for that. Okay, so the university became aware of the issue. We engaged both a consultant on FCC issues and a legal consultant to help us work through whether this made any sense at all or not. Many of our peers across the Big Ten and across the United States have engaged in a similar process. Some have clearly decided to sell. Others have clearly decided not to. At Michigan State, we're still in the process of trying to explore whether it makes sense or not and make sure we understand all the nuances of the decision. At the December board meeting, the Board of Trustees authorized the president to proceed. What that means is that it was we needed an official action from the board to allow the president to be the lead administrator to make decisions as we went down the road in this process. So the board authorized the president to proceed. That doesn't mean that doesn't mean anything other than she has the authority to make a decision as we progress down this path of thinking it through. As Gary said, on January 12th, we hit a point where we either need to tell the FCC that we want to be considered as participating or not. That doesn't mean that we're selling. It doesn't mean that we're necessarily participating. It simply is a required notice point with the FCC, which if we don't make it would preclude us from participating. At some point after January 12th and before March 29th, the university will make a decision as to whether it participates or not. And so having the forums at this point is a requirement before January 12th, the quiet period that Gary mentioned. But there's also a bit of a chicken and egg issue here, because we're still in the process of trying to figure out what all the answers are, what makes sense and what doesn't in terms of the value of the station, our ability to deliver content, our ability to maintain the station. As Gary said, we've been able to answer some questions about channel sharing and how that really, from our perspective, doesn't make sense given where we believe the future of the industry is going, but other questions remain unanswered. So what we'd like to do is, and I'd like to take as little time as possible to leave time for you, is to, one second, to give you the opportunity to provide comment. With that, I want to be really honest and straightforward in saying that there will be questions that we don't know the answer to. We'll tell you the information that we can. We'll get feedback as we learn more about it, if we can, prior to the 12th and the quiet period. But we want to hear what you all have to say and get your perspective, which is a critical element in thinking through this process. So with that said, there are hands up, but what I'd like to do is get our folks with microphones so that everybody can hear the questions and then or comments, and then we can respond.
I just want to ask,
can we wait?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and. Yeah.
I have other comments, believe it or not, but I would formally like to request that President Simon be available and present at next week's meeting. And I guess that I think a few other people would concur, seeing as you just gave her the power to make the decision. Thank you.
I'd like to ask if any part of this consideration is that WKAR would go off the air completely at WTV. Is that a consideration?
Yes.
Well, you might split a channel. I don't know.
What would definitively go off the air if we sold would be the over the air broadcast would go off the air, and we would probably then, and Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, but we would then the must carry that is associated with cable TV and people that have a dish. Would not apply if we were not an over-the-air station, as we understand the rules right now. Okay, so you want to try and put it in plain English, Gary?
Yes. If we relinquish the spectrum, WKAR as a broadcast station will cease. We are currently cable and satellite. That's what is called must carry. So a local cable company must carry us because we are a broadcaster. If we stop being a broadcaster, then we're off of cable. Now, would you see PBS? Yes, very likely. The cable companies would import a signal from Grand Rapids or Flint or Detroit and so on. But WKAR as an individual unit would not exist on air.
I get it off the air, which I get all three channels, but Dish Network, for instance, does not provide the two sub-channels. and which I enjoy Doc Martin. I think that's a really funny program. But any rate, and also there's been another problem down there, and not only Channel 23, but 53. I don't know why somebody's fooling around with the antennas or the power or their retubing transmitters or what. But it comes and goes. Sometimes it's not a matter of pixelating periodically. It's just either
that's
there or it's not.
Yep.
So
not
I'm a little concerned about that. But thank you.
Hello. Hi. My name is Jane Scherzer. We live in Okemos, and I have a daughter who's a student at MSU. I have two questions. One is, my first question is brief. I don't quite understand if you enter into this auction before you're in the quiet period. You make the decision before you go into the quiet period? Okay, while you're in the quiet period, after price is determined, do you have the opportunity to accept or not accept? Or do you enter the auction and you take whatever price you get?
Okay, so the way that the reverse auction would work is that the most we could get is $206 million. And then what they will do is, because we don't know what other stations in the area might be participating as, and this is all theoretical, but okay. but there then presumably would be other stations in the market or in the area, and if you know, if everybody sort of said no at a certain point, your price could be reduced. At any point in the process, you can say no. So we could say we play at 206, but we don't play at 205.9, or it. You know, so you can make that decision as you go.
Okay. So then my next question is, just making an assumption here, assuming you make the decision to sell the station, you're rewarded with this largesse of hundreds of millions of dollars. What are the plans for the proceeds of that? I'm hoping you're going to say they're going back into this department and not going into the general fund. But I'm curious to hear from you what process has been determined and where you expect the proceeds to go.
Well, as a starting point, we're not, you know, we don't know what the proceeds would be, but assuming that, I think that the way that the president explained it on the radio last week, was to think of it as an endowment. And if so just to pick a, I think she used the example of $200 million, so I'll use that example to be consistent. Our endowment draws or allows folks to spend about, departments to spend about 5% of that a year. So on $200 million, that gets you about $10 million in perpetuity that we would get from the sale. If it were $200 million, and we thought of that as an endowment, and we invested that, we would allow spending on that account of about $10 million a year, if that makes sense. So Lola, that's the next part. I follow. The precise, I may not follow with a satisfactory answer, but I'll give you an answer. The distribution of that between WKAR, the College of Communication Arts and Sciences, and the Greater University isn't something that we've discussed. I would say that as a benchmark, the and again, KR folks, correct me if I'm wrong, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting provides a grant on an annual basis of about $3 million a year. So that I think that serves as a benchmark for what at least continuing programming requirements would be. Beyond that, I'm not. We haven't gotten into detailed specifics on that.
I think I'm next question here. This is all really coming up very fast. I mean, I found out just a few days ago about it, and I understand that Michigan State only started to discuss it in December, yet other states knew about this back in October. Why was there such a delay in Michigan State addressing this? And I got that information on WKAR radio on my way over here.
Well, and as a longtime supporter of WKAR radio, I want to tell you that was absolutely accurate, because there's nothing on that station that isn't accurate. We did start to address it, and let me tell you how. Part of it was through what Mr. Beekman described as identifying both an FCC consultant and a legal consultant to just try to understand what this is. You've heard the description here tonight. And it took us, we actually got a first estimate of perhaps the value of the station earlier in the late summer. We really began to think about what this would mean for Michigan State and whether or not it was even reasonable to consider. And we started with some of that consideration of the channel sharing. And at first, I mean, when you think about that, you think, well, share, find a friend, share, you keep your station, they keep their station. As we began to peel away the layers, and we began to realize, but if we did that, here's what we couldn't do. Here's what it wouldn't provide to us. And so one little by little, we began to say, eliminate this possibility, eliminate that possibility. When participation in the auction became a real question, then we talked to the Board of Trustees about it, and that's what you see unfolding now. I want to reiterate something you've already heard twice, but I'm going to say it one more time. When we raise our hand, if we raise our hand next Tuesday, it does not obligate us to be part of this. It only allows us to be part of it if we should decide to. So while I know it feels fast and rushed and we're doing two things in 2 weeks and saying send your cards and letters, I just want you to realize that it's not, we're not digesting all this in 8 days, okay? And the Board of Trustees is not doing that. So there really is time to have thoughtful conversations among the decision makers. So I don't want you to feel as if, and we actually, the board took action on the 17th of December, but we deliberately didn't schedule anything until after the holiday because we thought that really gave folks the sense that they were under some wire. So that's where this unfolds in terms of the timeline. But I guess I want to reiterate that you're not being asked to say everything you need to say in 7 days, that we're welcoming ongoing comment and critique through the next several weeks.
Okay, can you hear me? All right, the Michigan State University is a tax-supported land-grant college. It's a public institution. Every chair, every light bulb, every blade of grass belongs to the public. It seems to me to be inappropriate and certainly ill-advised for the Board of Trustees, who are at least elected by the public, to kick the can down the road to one person, even if it's an interim decision. Any decision that you make under those circumstances, I feel, will certainly be challenged in a court of law, simply because of the circumstances surrounding it. Why would an elected board give someone who's unelected the right to make that decision? So I think you ought to reconsider how you're going forward, because I think you're opening yourself up to a lot of trouble.
Hi, my name is Steve Purdy. My wife, Kathy Zacco, and I live in rural Williamston. We've been supporters of WKAR for 25, 30 years, been members. Also, we're both MSU alum. But we depend on WKAR for news and entertainment, primarily good news. But I have a kind of a comment and a question. The comment is that I know we don't have a vote, but we vote no. We are among those who have no other choices for public TV. There's no cable where we are. We live in a forest and can't shoot a satellite, so nobody can provide us broadband, including the phone company, because we just have copper lines. So we'd just totally be out of luck if you quit broadcasting. The question is, I hear you say that you're only raising your hand now and the decision won't be made, but I would really be surprised if you were looking at $200 million and didn't take it. So my question essentially is, if you hold off for 5 years, I'm sure they're going to want that broadband again, and they're going to want, they'll give you $5 million, $500 million.
Well, I don't know if that's a question, but I guess I'll make a comment, and that's one of the things that we're working to try and better understand. Will there be future broadband auctions? Is this functionally sort of a lakefront property that will only increase in value, and if so, how much? Or will there be other technologies that appear that make it less valuable over time? And those are all questions that we've asked that we're exploring.
Okay, I have a question. In 1987, the Fairness Doctrine was changed to, for radio now I'm talking about. Well, maybe it involves TV. So political views didn't have to be fair. If one point of view was shown, the other and previous to that also had to be shown. When that doctrine was changed, that allowed the flourishing of right-wing radio. Obviously, I'm being a little political here. But which has drowned out voices, which brings me to public radio and public TV. The airwaves are our airwaves. I'm not just talking about WKAR. I'm not talking about cable. That's different. These are our airwaves, and they're like land. You don't get that back. It's gone. And to even say it might be worth more, who cares if it's worth more? Is everything down to it's too much, we have to buy it? I don't think so. I think the value of public TV is far more than the millions that will be come and gone. We always need money. All of us in this room have paid taxes our whole life. They always raise our taxes. And I'm quite happy to pay my share of taxes, actually. But I'm not happy to think that there's a value on our public airwaves, including our beloved public TV, that it's even a consideration. I'm very unhappy about that.
I'm Matthew Day Smith. I'm a journalist, but I came here tonight as a citizen. We grew up with public TV, a family of six kids. The only thing we were allowed to watch was WKAR. I'm going to show my age, but it was Sesame Street and Captain Kangaroo. And public television, to me, is WKAR. Is a public service, and I think that it's a disservice to keep those who aren't able, this gentleman here, who aren't able to get it. We're also looking at the kids and that don't have access to public TV or to the internet. So I think it's a big disadvantage and a disservice to the poor and to the low income as well. And I think it's a detriment if we don't keep it.
I'm going to speak from the old-time student perspective. I graduated from here in 1975. And this, yeah, just a young punk. I think that's something that, you know, in addition just to the whole community service thing, the service to the students here. I mean, what is this college here for if we take away one of their biggest tools? Now, based on the presentation that Mr. Reed gave a while ago here, basically you've already ruled out the channel sharing option because of the new standards that are going to be enacted within a couple of years. You've already ruled out a move to VHF. So that really leaves only relinquishment of the channel. So in the best case scenario, we're talking $206 million in exchange for giving up a real life educational experience for MSU students and giving up a local PBS voice in which the cultural dynamics of this area can be shown to everybody. To me, it's a no-brainer. We don't participate.
Well, first off, my days with WKAR go back to being on Gulliver's Clubhouse in the old Quonset hut on Kalamazoo. And the prospect of WKAR going dark, at least I would want to give my thanks to Julian Fellows for bringing Downton Abbey to a conclusion before the TV station goes off the air. But I do have one technical question. Now, if I recall correctly, Channel 10 still lives in VHF land, but the other stations locally, 6, 43, 47, 53, are all up in UHF. And if they don't participate in the auction, is enough bandwidth freed up to meet the FCC's requirement? Or if they don't participate, does that mean that KAR's bid is for naught?
The answer to that question is that's what we won't know. That's the whole part of the silent period. We don't know what the commercial stations are going to do, and as Bill mentioned a while ago, that's that reverse auction process. What I would say is that it's not just our local stations, but it's stations in Flint, Toledo, because this is kind of a mosaic of putting this together. No, there are multiple scenarios to be able to get to that 84 to 126 megahertz.
Okay, my question is, we were talking about all of the UHF stations in the area have been invited to participate in this auction, but what if they all say no? What if all the stations in the Lansing area do not want to participate? Will the FCC start mandating people to give up bandwidth? Is this going to happen anyway?
No, this is absolutely, for WKAR, for every station, a voluntary process. The FCC cannot and will not mandate this.
Yes. Somebody once referred to us as little brother. We have taught that person, that institution, perhaps a thing or two. On the other hand, maybe we could learn something from younger sister. Central Michigan University has built, installed transmitters all over northern Michigan and into the UP so that people who don't have cable, in fact, never will have cable because it's uneconomical, and they don't want the satellite because you get clouds, you get trees. They have a lot of trees up there, and we have a home up there, and we rely on CMU-TV, and we, of course, contribute to them and try to do our share, but there are people who can't, and those are the people who need what this land grant, premier unit land grant university, was set up to accomplish. I believe this would be a sacred dereliction of our sacred duty before the people of this country, before this nation, to eliminate this aspect of our extension.
One thing that was mentioned, that Dr. Simon mentioned on on her interview with WKAR, was the availability of programming via the internet. And it's already been commented that a lot of people don't have the internet. But it sounds to me, if I did my math right, that they may be asking one third of the UHF channels to give up their spectrum. If a third of broadcast, 700 of 1,700. If all those channels stop their PBS subscriptions, how are the NewsHour going to continue? How is Washington Week going to continue? How is Sesame Street going to continue? I see in this audience, I expect most of you are from East Lansing, Okemos, Jackson, so forth. I'm a volunteer at the Boys and Girls Club of Lansing. This is in Southwest Lansing. It serves, at 85% of the kids that it serves are qualified for reduced price or free lunch. It's a low-income neighborhood. I was out there this afternoon after school, and so I asked people, I asked the parents picking up the kids, I asked some of the kids, do you use public TV? Yes. Can they get it the internet? No. If they have an internet connection, it's low speed. All except one of the kids I talked to had consumed Sesame Street. I talked to a retired principal there from Pleasant View Elementary, which is next door. It's on South Pleasant Grove. All of the kids in the Pleasant that she served in Pleasant Grove School were benefited from WKAR TV. Teachers use some of the programs, the reading programs. The kids rely on that because they don't get, their parents don't send them to preschool. They rely on Sesame Street and the other programming. So the question is whether $10 million or $5 million, what per year, what's it worth to keep that going for all of us and for those kids?
Hi, my name is Ann Hansen, and I represent three over-the-air households. I'm originally from Ionia. My parents still live in Ionia, and my brother is in Greenville, very rural. We rely upon antennas to get our TV. And by the way, my parents have been a WKAR supporter for decades, and I grew up on it. So we look at WKAR as key programming. Now, I've done some research, by the way. I happen to be a marketing and media expert. So I wanted to come here with some facts. I appreciated the fact that you brought some facts, too. So from my calculations, by the way, how many over-the-air, antenna-only households are there represented here? So in the numbers that you put up, I calculate that more than 122,000 over-the-air TV viewing homes are affected by the loss of WKAR. That's from your number of 722,000 homes and 17% that are OTA. I'll use OTA as the abbreviation. By the way, OTA households are more likely to view PBS by a third. Additionally, OTA TV households are growing. More people are throwing away their cable bills, and I know I did. That's why I got an antenna, because of the higher costs of cable. TV, you said it earlier, but I want to underscore the point that you can't guarantee that PBS and certainly the substations would be on cable or available to consumers once you went off the air. So I'm very much against this, and I really don't understand why we're valuing spectrum over viewers, over consumers. And what we would also be doing as a last point is we would be putting public TV in the hands of private companies. If we were talking about ABC or NBC or CBS, they're private companies. I can't affect what they do, but my taxes go to pay for public TV, and I do not want to have public TV directed by Comcast or Charter or any of those other cable bandits. Thank you.
Hello? Oh, it's on. Okay. Let's all just take a deep breath really quick. Okay. I am a current student at MSU, I think unlike a lot of people in here. So my question is, what will the TV station be replaced with for the members of the people that are majoring in media arts, the people that are majoring in journalism, the members of the ComArt Sci department? Because, I mean, this is an integral resource in the education process, and other people have talked about this, and Dr. Leanna Simon addressed this in her radio interview, saying that a lot of AAU universities don't have a TV station. And I mean, we're not an AAU university, we're a land-grant institution. We are an AAU, my bad, sorry. If we weren't AAU, that would be bad. We're a land-grant institution, though, and to me, that means that the focus should be teaching for the students, for the undergrads, for the graduate students. I mean, land-grant was made to teach engineering, military engineering, and agriculture. And obviously, we've expanded beyond those two subjects into a vast variety of opportunities for our students, but it remains the same. The goal should be to teach. So what is going to be the replacement? What has been brainstormed to kind of fill this gap in the curriculum for the students of the college?
This is a really very good question. Something that we talked about quite a bit, and this was brought up with the president as well. Clearly, there is going to be a little bit of erosion. You're not going to get the same kind of experience, hands-on experience, in terms of transmission and the technical aspects of broadcasting. However, President Simon has made a commitment, but more than that, as a college, with or without KAR, there is a strong commitment to content production. So a vast majority of the skills that you currently have will continue to offer, and we are recruiting 10 people, professors of practice, to teach students hands-on skills in the media arts. But I'm not going to duck your question. There is going to be a definite loss in terms of a very narrow skill set of getting programming on the air, sort of the engineering aspects, as well as live production.
It seems to me that like one of the parts, sorry if I'm taking time, one of the parts on the website is listed as TV and radio production. That is a focus on the website of the College of Journalism, of the College ComArt Sci. That's a focus. Like, if you take that away, you're losing students. You're losing opportunities. You're affecting the current students who wanted to do it. That's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Doug DeLynn, and I've been a longtime supporter of WAKAR. I came out with different figures than Ann. I came out with 272,000 people that you're no longer going to be able to reach. And my question is to you, Vice President Beekman, how is the board and the administration going to make up for the monies that they no longer get from those alumni who are put off by this?
Well, I'm not sure that I can provide a precise answer to that. I don't know how much those people give, but I don't know that I can precisely answer that question.
Then figure that out, please.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Rick Boyd. I'm a minister in town. My wife, Karen Twyman, and I watch by antenna. I'm sure others could make the same point, but I would like to. We're all Native Americans now, and we're being robbed of our land, is what I'm going to say. Many years ago, I went to El Salvador. I saw what it was like to live in a country where there was no middle class, none. All of the land was owned by a small group of people, and the country suffered. And in the 30 years since I've been back from El Salvador, I've seen my country look more and more like a third world country every day. As a pastor, I deal with many people who are poor and downwardly mobile. Their standard of living is falling. And you only have to go to one or two kids and uncles and aunts and nieces to see people falling off the face of the earth for lack of resources. This country was made great by the fact that we had such institutions as a land-grant college where land was given so there could be an institution put upon it. And I don't think MSU would appreciate it if that land were suddenly taken away. It would not be able to function as a public university without that grant of land. And I think that public television is one of the few ways in which people are kind of still equal, in a sense, that they have an access to education and access to points of view and access to find out that they are American, and that we have hope for this country. Years ago, before we went digital with television, there was a question as to how the FCC could sell airwaves. They were a public good, as someone else mentioned here. And then, well, oh, it's okay, we'll make it digital. So we'll give up that the first airway to the phone companies or the police scanners. And now even that resource is being taken away. So I feel we really are like the Native Americans who used to roam freely, and then were corralled on a reservation. And then when it was found out that there was something valuable in that reservation, they were relocated to some place with arsenic in the water. And I think our freedoms have been relocated and shrunk and truncated over and over again. So what's next? What would be next once the airways are gone? We used to have commonwealth. We used to have public goods. That meant public trust. We see food deserts in this country. We're going to see cultural deserts in this country. We already do. And public television is one of the few oases. There was a time when Congress tried to kill PBS by votes, and now they're trying to kill it by offering the university money. So my question, I have great feeling for you up here, feeling an audience that had to leave our pitchforks outside. But what is the cost of repacking? It almost sounds as if even if you say no to this offer, that perhaps the cost of relocating the station to this new band was going to be prohibitively expensive. No? Then why do it at all for the reasons that everyone else has said tonight? But please, Mr. Reed, would you tell us what is the cost of repacking?
The FCC has allocated $1.75 billion to reimburse all of the TV stations for the new transmitters and new antennas in those options. For WKAR, because we have a beautiful brand new four-year-old tower out behind Meyer in Okemos, out on Dolby Road, we are in remarkably good shape. For the past 10 years, we've been working forward to upgrade our signal, upgrade our antennas. So frankly, for us to move to a separate frequency will be relatively cheap. For other stations, it will be enormously expensive, and that $1.75 billion that has been set aside, many projections are that won't be enough.
Hi, my name's Bruce Walker. I'd like to offer a couple of comments based on two roles I've had in my life. I'm currently a trustee for a township south of Lansing. I was unknown, so I walked the entire township going door to door to introduce myself to people, and I asked them, you know, if you have a complaint or what would you like us to work on, what would it be? Number one complaints, lack of cell phone coverage, lack of internet.